Hello, everyone. This is a special bonus episode for our podcast. As many of you know, we have been in a search for a new senior pastor at Southview for the last year, and this last weekend was an important weekend for us in that process, as the search team and the Board of Elders invited Ryan and Christina Graham to come and candidate. So this bonus episode is the audio from a town hall that we had on Sunday, April 21st, where we had opportunity to hear from Ryan and get to know him a little bit as a congregation. This town hall was moderated by Eldon Harms, one of the elders here at Southview, and it was a great opportunity to hear from Ryan answers to questions from our congregation. Questions were submitted in advance to our search team, and there were a lot of them. So continue to pray for us as a church, along with Ryan and Christina, as each of us seek to hear God's voice in this process.
So as I said earlier, we're thrilled to have Ryan and Christina here with us. Quick run through his bio, and then we're going to have him come up. So for those of you that maybe don't know him or his background, after graduating with a Bachelor of Religious Education degree from Canadian Bible College in the late 90s, Ryan served as student ministry director and teaching pastor at First Alliance here in Calgary for 8 years before being called to Westlife Church as senior pastor in 2005, where they experienced a season of congregational growth, building expansion, and partnered in planting a new church on Calgary's west side. In 2015, Ryan and Christina felt that they were being led to leave Westlife and move out east to serve the Alliance Canada at the national office. We will hear more about what led them to take on that role at the national office a little bit later. Starting as the National Director of Leader Development, and after a period of time as Vice President of Nurture and Development, Ryan has spent the last 2 years as National Vice President of the Alliance, providing oversight to a number of Alliance initiatives, including New Ventures Canada, Envision Canada, and Defend Dignity, as well as leading the various Alliance National Cultural Associations, which leads us to today. We are looking forward to hearing the story of what led Ryan and Christina back to West Calgary and feeling called back to serve in a local church. So please give Ryan a warm Southview welcome. And Ryan, please come up.
Hi again, everybody. And if you weren't here today, hi, I'm Ryan.
Perfect. All right, so here we go with the first question. You ready, Ryan?
Maybe. When I saw all the crowd for the first meeting, I was like, okay, this will be okay. This is fine. It's grown a little bit, which actually speaks to how much you care about your church. So let's roll.
Totally. All right, here we go. So the answer to this question will probably have a significant impact on your future at Southview. It's an extremely important question. Might be loaded. If I recall correctly, you, Ryan, started your career here in Calgary and then went to Ontario. So the all-important question is this. Are you a Maple Leafs fan or a Flames fan? Heaven forbid the Sens.
I love Calgary. I grew up in the Toronto area, though. And the Maple Leafs will never leave this heart. That said, in the 04 run, I did passionately cheer for the Flames. And upon return, the Leafs will never leave my heart, but I will gladly cheer for the Flames as well.
So you wouldn't believe how hard that is for an Oilers fan to hear any of that. Wow. But thanks. So on, with that settled, tell us about yourself, maybe your family, and maybe the current stage of life you're at with your kids as well.
Yeah. Well, you got to meet Christina this morning when she was kind of introducing our kids, and you see a picture of our kids up on the screen there. The phase of life that we are in, and I guess I'll answer it this way. when we went out to Toronto, and Dave Hearn, that's probably a question that's coming eventually, why'd we go there, but Dave asked us to come take on that role, I had always said to him, Dave, you've got me until Abby graduates. When Abby graduates, there'll be a free agent sticker that I will put on my forehead, and we will search for whatever is next. And hey, Abby graduates in like 4 or 5 weeks, and here I am sitting before you right now. So God knew that was kind of the plans as well. So the stage of life that we're in with our kids, sorry, you learn that Kaylee, that's the one in the brown, is that a brown dress? It's brown, right? The brown dress next to me, she's marrying Aiden in June, and they're planning to stay. The kids all want to move back west, which is really kind of cool. Kaylee and Aiden are going to stay in Toronto for a couple of years. Aiden is in sports media. He does a bunch of digital content creation stuff that all of you have watched on different things, and you wouldn't know that. But they're staying in Toronto because he will get free tickets to the World Cup. That is the reason that they want to stay, and I fully understand it. So they're staying there for a couple of years, and Zach is finishing his second year, and so he's got a couple more years left in his degree. So you can pray for us in trying to find a spot for him to live come this fall. And then Abby graduates and is going to go to Cape and Wright, to Bodensee Hof next year. And we think, did she actually accept to UBC? She has till May 1st, but she's planning to accept going to UBC. So we're going to pray very hard that she does not get the BC bug that I know a lot of people get. But yeah.
That's great. Curious about Buster. I think, plans with Buster?
Oh, yeah, Buster. He's awesome. Yeah.
Buster's sticking around.
Yeah, Buster is coming with us. He will become our child. He is our child, but yeah.
Perfect. What do you and your family like to do for fun?
Well, Christana and I, the kids don't like to do this, but Christana and I are avid cyclists, and we love getting up early in the morning and going for long rides, and she is a very strong rider. And currently in our community where we live in Toronto, we have a group called, our neighborhood is in an area called Lakeview, but it's a little called Applewood Village within Lakeview, and we've got about 15 people in our community then. We get up real early and go for long rides. What's the name of our? The Road Apples. And nobody in Ontario knows what that means. And so when they recommended that, we were like, that's perfect. That's a great name.
The Road Apples. Yeah, we'll keep that in mind.
And we like doing that. And as a family, all of our kids, it's on the bio that they put on the national office. And our kids do. We all love hanging out. The kids all love hanging out together.
That's so cool. Okay, one more before we move to some more of the serious stuff.
Got it.
Can you tell us something that most people don't know about you or what you've missed about Calgary? Or maybe both.
What people don't know about me? Oh, that's a good question. I'm actually a really kind of handy guy. And during the pandemic, we are road cyclists. I built an entire bike shop in my basement and built bikes from scratch and absolutely love doing it. I can't afford to keep building them, but love doing it. And what I love about that is I had no idea how to do it. And so it's the discovery and learning of something that I've never done before that I loved. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
What do I miss about Calgary?
Yeah.
I've actually had to like squint when I go outside because there's sun all the time. And my eyes will have to adapt to that again. But I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, no, that's great. All right, so what drew you to the national office in the first place?
Yeah, good question. So back in late 2014, these chairs, mine twists a lot.
Yeah, mine's
itself.
Doing things too, just trying to make it look natural.
Maybe they're just trying to get me to talk to this crew over here. I'm not doing that. It's moving it by itself. That's why my hand keeps going on here. Dave Hearn gave us a call and said, Ryan, the denomination is aging really, really fast. Not so much the congregations, but the workforce, our licensed workers. And he kind of said, Ambrose is still a phenomenal school. And when it moved here, it became a university. And it has many different degrees that it offers. When it was in Regina, it was a Bible college. And that was the historic pipeline of the Alliance for a lot of its workers. And that's not the case today. We just did a study a number of years back, and I had every district do some study into where their last 100 hires came from. And we discovered that across the country, our last batch of workers came from 110 different institutions, right? So he kind of said, we don't really have a lot of plans of how we're going to identify, develop, and release, and raise up new leaders to take all the different positions and jobs and start new things. And really the job was, we don't have a plan, help us come up with something. Help us come up with a plan. And I was turning 40 at that point in time, or I just turned 40, and we thought, well, you know, let's give this a run, and let's see if we can make a dent in helping the denomination get a little bit younger and raise up a whole bunch of leaders. And we have. In the 9 years that we've been doing it, I'll get the latest stats right before General Assembly in August, but the latest stat was about 1,050 new licensed workers over that time that we've raised up. So we did make a bit of a dent. But that's what drew us there. It was the opportunity for that.
That's great. That's great. Thanks for sharing that. What has led you back to wanting to pastor a local church again? And how is your time at the national office better prepared for local church ministry?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I had always said to Dave and to Darren, the new president, when Darren got elected, I said, you've got me for probably 2 years. I will do my best to try and set you up, to get you established. In a very short period of time at the national office, I went from being the youngest guy by a lot to all of a sudden I wasn't. I was one of the oldest guys very quickly and had the most institutional knowledge. And so I knew I needed to stick around for a little while to help him get on his feet and help him work out some strategy. And he and I have built a phenomenal relationship. But I knew that my time at the national level was going to come to a close. And we began to discern, and I talked a little bit about that this morning, what is the best environment to take all that we have learned over the last 9 years in seeing the church in like across Canada. The church is not the same all across Canada. The Alliance Church is not the same in what it is experiencing all across Canada. And Jesus has given us an incredible opportunity and window in what is and isn't happening in the church across Canada and the world. When I was vice president of Nurture and Development, that was a global role. I was not just doing stuff in Canada, that was all over the world. And I've had the opportunity to sit with leaders all over the world to learn from them and understand what's happening, how they're planting churches, how they're developing leaders, what's happening in their churches. So there's that side of it, in taking all that knowledge and experience and wanting to apply it in the most effective place, in what I think is going to be the most significant decade of contribution, which is the decade ahead of us. The other side of it was, I've never stopped preaching during that time. I preach all the time, but it's totally different when you're a guest speaker at a church than it is to journey with a congregation together and stewarding the word and developing a series and wrestling through that in community. I grieved that for a long time, and I don't want to grieve it anymore. I want to get back into that situation where we can do that together. So that was something that was, when I started over the last year, I have on my phone, which I did not bring up on here on purpose, which is a very good thing. I have probably 5 to 6 years of sermons outlined and sermon series outlined. When I'm waiting at an airport or on a plane, I just outline series after series. Now, the teaching team may look at me and go, that's a terrible series. Don't ever do that. That's a bad idea. But that dreaming and thinking and praying began to really, really come to life in me again. So thrilled at the opportunity to put that into practice.
I'm guessing maybe you've created a few while you're in Calgary these last 4 days.
No, I haven't. Okay. Because you've had me incredibly busy.
Yeah, fair enough.
Incredibly
He's
busy.
He's been going since Thursday all day. And, yes. Fair point. What are the potential drawbacks from being at the national office and not pastoring at a local church for the last 9 years?
Well, we're going to discover.
Fair.
And you will all let me know. Yeah, I think I'll give two answers to that, because there's a positive and a negative to that. So I'm going to have to re-engage in the rhythm of the local church. the church has actually, from a pastoral standpoint, it actually has a wonderful rhythm, and you kind of get into that. And the national thing does not, it is a rhythmless job. You are all over the place. You're in this city or this country or these meetings and this meeting, and you're wearing a lot of different hats. So kind of unwinding that and re-engaging into the rhythm of the church, it may take a little bit. I don't think it'll take long, but it may take a little bit of time. What I will say is people will say, yeah, but you missed so much. Well, no, not really, because a lot of the hard things that the churches were dealing with this is, I was where they ended up for a lot of it, right? So we were dealing in the trenches, working with churches that were going through incredible things through the pandemic or and whatnot. And my role also, you know, I lead a number of ministry networks for the Alliance. So I'm sitting with Jeff Stewart, who leads our national youth and our national youth team of youth pastors, wrestling with what's going on in youth culture and young adult culture and kids culture with our children's network. So I'm still very much engaged in that kind of stuff and incredibly passionate about it. So your role is disconnected, but not as disconnected as people might think. The positive side of stepping out of pastoral leadership for a few years is I know what it feels like to sit where you're all sitting, right? So I know what it feels like to be in a members meeting and ask questions about sale of land or planting a new church. I know what it feels like to sit with my pastor as he is going through an incredibly hard time and wanting to wrestle through things and quit and whatnot, and to come alongside some of them and be a friend and a support. So I actually view some of that as an incredible blessing, because I can take the pastor hat off now and remember what it felt like to be a member of the congregation for the last number of years.
That's great context. That helps. In the last 10 years, you've traveled the country and experienced various expressions of the church across Canada. And you may have partially answered this already. How has that informed your understanding of the church today? And then it's a two-parter for you. And how might that impact your leadership of a church like Southview?
Great question. Yeah, like I said, the life of the church in Canada is very diverse across the country. So if you're in the GTA, a church of 150 is a thriving, healthy church, right? If you want to plant new works, you don't have churches that have 15 or 1,800 people in it that can send off 100 people and fund a worker. That's not an option because those churches don't exist. There are a few, right? We're a part of Rexdale Alliance. Rexdale Alliance went from about 1,200 to 200 and is back up to about 450 right now. And that's one of our healthiest and largest churches. We've still got Bayview Glen, but I'm just giving you a little bit of context. Yet we have launched 70 new works in Ontario. Well, how do you do that without a pool of people and resources? So we develop things like discernment communities. Hey, you're in a community. You've got some people that live in proximity to you that love Jesus. Why don't you start meeting with them together and begin discerning, does God want to do something here? What are the places that we can get engaged? What if something were to emerge? And tons of things have emerged across the country without big funding, without dollars, because they don't exist. So another example I would say is, I'll take BC as an example. There's the life of the church in the Lower Mainland, but that is a totally different experience than the life of the church in the city of Vancouver proper. So when you leave on those bridges from Vancouver proper, you actually head into a bit of a Bible Belt. But the city of Vancouver is a totally different discussion, a completely different discussion. So I'm saying that from the standpoint of what works in one place does not mean it's going to work in another place. And someone coming from this place and going to that place doesn't mean they're going to have the same experience. They may have had incredible fruit in this place, and it doesn't work in that place. It's very contextual across the country. And so some of that learning will absolutely inform what we do, how we do it, when we do it, what it looks like, and what we actually say, we're going to bless that. We're going to partner with that. We're going to give energy to that. We're going to blow wind into that. We're going to, you know, support that. That's incredibly exciting to me. So, yeah.
That sounds very exciting. So I know you're a car guy, so we'll do a little gear shift, maybe shift down one notch, more personal on this one. Do you have people in your life to help keep you accountable? And can you give an example of how they've influenced you?
Yeah, many. I'm a really lucky guy. So I have different pockets of people that I would say speak into my life. I have some people that are a lot older than me that are mentors. And, I have a spiritual director that I meet with who is praying right now. And a bunch of you, I'm not going to say his name, but a bunch of you know who he is. And speaks very deeply into my life and others. And then I have my pocket of what I would call my ministry clan, my ministry friends. And you had Mark Peters up here a little while ago. I think Mark has texted probably 20 to 30 times over the last 3 to 5 days about what's happening and whatnot. And we have about 4 or 5 of us guys that absolutely everything is on the table. Nothing is off limits. And these are ministry friends that we do life together. And we're all over the country. And we still talk almost daily. We talk with one another. And then I have friends. I have a number of friends here, and some of their parents and in-laws are in the room right now from previous churches that are their brothers. Like they're my brothers, and we do life together. And even though there's distance between us at times, we're constantly in contact, praying for each other, and holding each other accountable and speaking into each other's lives. So yeah, I got a number of people. And then I have my ministry, like my staff, and there's some staff that I have that are, they're brothers and sisters, and we do life together. So, yeah, I have a lot of people. I'm very blessed in that capacity, yeah.
What lessons have you learned along the way of ministry that have been most impactful and formed you most?
I asked Christiana that question because I saw that when we were sitting in Starbucks a few minutes ago or hours ago. I would say when I was younger, I'm a high-energy guy, and there was a lot of drive, and I would make decisions really quickly. That doesn't happen very often anymore. I think...
The energy part or the decision?
No, the energy's still there. Becoming far more thoughtful, becoming far more non-reactive, particularly in a denominational role where there's such diversity theologically, and everybody thinks you believe them and are on the same page as them, right? And so learning how to listen, learning how to lead as a patient, thoughtful, non-reactive leader, that has helped a lot in a lot of situations and diffused a lot of really tough situations across the denomination. I mean, I would say it this way. There's so many times that I just take a step back and go, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. Yeah.
It's amazing as we get older how we hopefully start thinking.
Get over ourselves.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. Great way to say it. Over the years, preaching has fallen into various categories. Broadly, those include expository and topical. Where would you place your preaching?
So where would I place my preaching, everybody? You all listened today.
Gather and scatter?
Yeah. And there are broad categories of preaching. Even when you say, are you an exegetical preacher? Are you a topical preacher? Are you a narrative preacher? All these, there's incredible diversity even in each of those little categories. And I often say to people that I'm an exegetical narrative preacher, meaning I'm always in a text, but I will always tell story and share story. And I'm very intentional in that because my style of teaching and preaching, I actually want to talk and touch the generations, not one or two. I actually want to engage as many generations as possible in my teaching. And all these different structures and styles of preaching and teaching that exist, they're all constructs that we've created. And everyone believes that their version is the biblical version. Yet that didn't exist in the New Testament, right? Because they weren't preaching the New Testament in the New Testament time because they didn't have it yet, right? So everybody thinks that they're the biblical way. And I don't even really get into a lot of those debates. If there are people that love to just kind of go and go verse by verse by verse, and it takes 5 years to go through the New Testament, if that is what Jesus has laid on your heart and the people that you're leading are being fed by that, great. I'm a little more cautious on the solely topical preaching where the idea dictates what scripture you use. Do you get what I'm saying with that? So the text doesn't dictate what you communicate. Your topic does. And I'm a little more cautious of that style of preaching because my experience of that is that you're often jumping all over the scriptures and people are pulling one verse out here and one verse out here. And being contextual is actually very, very important to understanding what it was written to, who it was written to, why it was written, and the context around. That's why I spent 10 minutes setting up the context today, because it spoke to the text. So, yeah, that would be my answer to that.
Thanks, Ryan. During the interim period that we've been in as a church, the pulpit ministry has largely been a team approach. What is your vision for the ongoing teaching, preaching ministry here at Southview?
Yeah. So I know that there are some of you in the room that are kind of like, we want one communicator 50 whatever weeks a year, and there's others of you in the room that are saying, we love the teaching team. I'll just say to you, I actually love a teaching team. I am where I'm at today, and don't worry, I'll get to the rest of you in a second, but I am where I am at today because in the 1990s, Terry Young identified that Ryan Graham and Mark Peters had a preaching gift. And he could have taken the pulpit and not developed us, but he made a choice. He said, no, these guys have some potential. And over years, he developed us to the point that when by the time I left and Mark left, we were sharing the teaching. And the church actually, well, I think they liked us. I don't know if they actually liked us, but they would say they liked us. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter who was preaching that Sunday. It didn't matter. If it was Ryan or Mark or Terry, the church, the congregation was excited for whoever was preaching. And so I love a teaching team approach. Also because I want Southview to be a developmental place. I want to see a culture of leader development that permeates every aspect, not just on our staff, but all through. I want this to be a church that is constantly blessing and sending out. And a couple of comments on that. Will I still be the primary communicator? Yeah. Yeah, and I think there are some things that I need to be the voice for the congregation around. But do I want to share the pulpit? Yes, I really, really do. Because there's a collaborative approach when there are multiple minds that are coming together to take all those really bad, rough ideas that I come up with in airports and flush it out and make it better. So does that answer?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's good. How do you handle comments, or would you handle comments, comparing you to Clyde? Well, Keep in mind, these are questions you've submitted.
Well, I would say Clyde's like 6 foot, I don't know how much, and I'm not. So I don't think we look alike at all.
Correct.
Oh, that's not what you mean. Right, yeah. Well, actually, I wouldn't compare myself. I'm not going to compare myself to Clyde. That actually is a question that all of you probably have to wrestle with. Because you're the ones that will be doing the comparison. So I think all of you probably have to wrestle with that. Here's what I would say. Clyde's awesome. But I'm Ryan Graham. And I'm not a rookie. I've been around for a long time. And I will bring what I bring to this role. And if things go okay tomorrow night, the first phone call that I'll make is to Clyde, you know? So, yeah, that's how I'd answer that.
I was curious what you would do with that, so that's great. Southview has come to love liturgical elements in our worship services. Is that something you are accustomed with, and are you open to continuing with this element of worship?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I thought there would be more in what I would experience. believe it or not, a lot of our churches are picking up a lot of liturgical elements. So the church we're a part of at Rexdale, many of the things that you do on a regular basis there, here, we do there on a regular basis too. So I really like it. And, you know, the team, they're all sitting over in different places. I'm not coming to change up a bunch of stuff. I'm coming to come together with and build on what already exists. And there could be more to come, right?
That's great. What does being part of the community look like for you and for Christana?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really good question. Because there were, I'm going to be vulnerable. And maybe that's a total mistake, but I'm going to be vulnerable. Now you're learning Ryan right now. You know, the Saturday night crowd, that was kind of a normal sized church. That's what, it would be a little bigger than what we got all in Ontario. And I often speak in churches out west, but my predominant experience the last little while has been Ontario. But this morning, there were some moments where I was like, oh man, this is a really big church. Wow. I got to get my head around this. Yeah, I got to get my head around it. I'm just being honest. I got to get my head around it. For Christana and I, here's what I would say. We will intentionally, with the elders board and the spouses and with the staff and spouses, early on, we got to dig in and build relationship there. And we will make friends all through the congregation, and that will just naturally emerge. I think you'll learn that both Christana and I are incredibly relational and accessible people. But there was an element of this morning going, how do you get to know this many people? So we got to get our heads around it. But initially, we'll be pouring a lot of time into the staff and their families and the elders and their families, just to learn who each other are. And then over time, we'll get to know more and more. And actually, as I look out around here, we know tons of you all already and have existing relationship, which is actually really wonderful for Christana and I.
Yeah. Thanks for your vulnerability with that question. What are some of the ways that you could see Southview becoming more engaged in our community and the neighborhood?
Yeah. So one of the lines that I've been talking with the board a little bit, and recently been engaging with the board, but with the search team all along, is a statement. You all have gather and scatter, and you're going to hear a bunch of these other little lines of Ryan over there.
B seemed to remember that land meeting.
Yep, so that's right.
Good job,
yep.
B.
But there's a phrase called raising the missional capacity of a church, and that is actually taking a look at, there's things that we do really, really well already. I can tell. I've been here for a weekend, and we do the gathering really, really well. And some of the ministries that exist within the walls of the church, we do really, really well. But you got a glimpse of my heart, which is to get all of us out there. And that often isn't programmatic. So it's actually not launching a whole bunch of new programs for the church to facilitate, operate, and fund. It's actually equipping all of us to get engaged in what already exists in many cases out there. So one of the questions that I asked the search team was, do you all know the top identifiable needs of the community of Walden? And it was pretty silent. And that's not to throw anybody under the bus, but that was, to me, an element of, okay, that's an opportunity. That is an opportunity for us. So what are the greatest needs of the South Calgary communities that Southview is a part of, that all of you come from? And what are the most important ways that we can get outside of the walls and get engaged in many of those ministries and organizations to actually serve and be Jesus in front of people that need Jesus? So that's raising the missional capacity. And we, as an elders board and a team, we're going to go on a journey. So over the next, I say for the first 6 months, I'm not changing anything. I'm here to learn. I don't know. Why would I change things that I don't actually know why you do what you do, right? So my posture is to learn, 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 to listen, listen, listen. And then as an elders board and a pastoral staff, we're going to start going on a journey of assessing and finding out and discerning and discovering how we raise the missional capacity and what the most effective ways to do that will be. So I think the impact of this church is going to significantly grow outside of our walls in the years to come, and I'm crazy pumped about that.
Gives us actually a lot to think about in that context. That's really good. What are your thoughts, and I'm guessing you might have some, on church planting and how we might best accomplish it?
Do I want to see Salesview become a church that multiplies? Absolutely. Am I being prescriptive to what that looks like? Nope. Nope. We got to discern that. That's part of the journey that we go on together. It could look like many different things. Except once I got the call, I started watching a bunch of the videos and going back to see your services, and I saw you got one of our new venture guys that's planting a new work somewhere. Where is it? Yeah, you were Woodbine. Yeah, phenomenal. That is great. That's one model of new venture and church planting. And maybe Jesus will ask us to do that. Maybe Jesus will say, hey, 100 people, 150 people, we want you to go to one of these new, go to Alpine Park and plant a new work. Great. Totally open to that. Maybe it might be that there's some things that are emerging in some of the communities. It could be a network of parish churches that meet in homes, kind of like the New Testament. And we just say, yeah, absolutely. We'll bless you. We'll resource you. What do you need? How do we partner with you? So there's all kinds of different opportunities that exist to see. And that includes in raising the missional capacity and church planting and sending out people that will go international and do some things. There's incredible need all over the world, even in the international church realm of things. So what multiplication looks like, let's blow that up a little bit and see what Jesus has for us. But I don't want to be, tonight, I don't want to be prescriptive and say, this is what we're going to do. No, we're going to discern that together as we seek Jesus and the Spirit leads.
That's definitely something good for us to keep praying about for sure. What is discipleship? And what does that look like in the life of the church today?
Yeah. Did you listen today to the sermon?
So you wore your sweater yesterday to be consistent, so just, no.
Yeah, that's right. I used a phrase, and I know whenever you use a phrase that is being popularized by somebody, there's somebody who, or there's others who will be like, well, I don't like that person, or I like this person, I like that person. You know, I talked about practicing the ways of Jesus, which is a fantastic statement. Now, I understand that's getting associated with John Mark Comer, and John, you know, Jesus is doing some great things through his ministry these days. But the principle of the phrase is what discipleship is. You and I, over the course of our lives, being like and practicing doing what Jesus did. That is what discipleship is. It's being an apprentice of Jesus. He had his Talmidim, his group that he apprenticed, and he just said to them, watch me and then do what I do. And that's what it is to be a disciple. So am I going to camp us down? We're going to become this or we're going to become this. I am not a guy that is heavily influenced by any one line of thinking. I'm always curious. But yeah, you're hiring a senior pastor, but I work with an incredible group of people who are passionate and gifted and have ideas and will shape this place. And elders, you know, you don't get to vote on me. Phew. But you do get to vote on all these elders, right? And that's an important vote because they are heavily shaping the direction of the church. And that's who I get to work with. So that'd be my answer.
Thanks, Ryan. From your time at the national office, what do you feel are the greatest challenges that the church will face over the next number of years?
Yeah. I don't want to get into the financial stuff that we were talking about before. So what I'll park on is the mass exodus of the emerging generations from our churches. You know, that is happening all across the country and across North America. It's not happening in the global South. There is a Pentecost happening every hour in the global South. People are coming to Jesus like crazy all over the world. The statistic is about annual church growth rate in the global South is about 4% a year. That is millions and millions of people every year coming to faith. That's just not happening here in North America. in the Western church. And so there are a ton of reasons that the emerging generations and younger generations, and when I talk about the emerging generations, we've kind of grouped them into three generations, right? The your kids that are kind of from 7 to 12, like your kids ministry kind of stuff, 13 to 18, and then 18 to 28. Those are kind of identifiable demographics. And the exodus is astounding. We just, as a family of churches, the Alliance, we were a part of an EFC study called, it was the follow-up to Hemorrhaging Faith, and it was called Parenting Faith, and it's available, and I can get it to all of you. That study was about how parents, not churches, how parents are doing at transferring faith to their kids. And the divergence of thought of whose responsibility it is to be discipling and passing on faith was very enlightening. And the stats, obviously, I mean, you probably all know the stats aren't great these days. But there's a number of reasons for the exodus, and I think we're going to get to some of those conversations in a minute and some of the questions that are coming. So I would say the greatest challenge right now for the church is the exodus of the emerging generations. Secondary, and these are conversations that are better had one-on-one or in small group, not in... There's a lot of people here tonight, so... But the pollers that are existing within the church today that are actually not helping. And that'll be a comment that I'll just hang out there.
Fair enough. What about social issues of our day? So LGBTQ, MAID, abortion, inclusiveness, racism, etc. How would you help Southview navigate through these challenging times?
And those are all the things that are causing the exodus of the emerging generation from our churches. And I had a feeling that question was coming. Here's what I would say. As a church, we have the journey and the responsibility to be a people that, while holding on to the orthodoxy of scriptures and what God's purpose and design, and there is a design, and I do hold to the fact that the scriptures are an authority in describing God's purpose and plan for humanity and for people, why he created us. So holding on to that orthodoxy in an incredibly broken world. And actually, the whole point of the cross and what we are now called to be is ministers of reconciliation in all of it. So there is a posture that is very important for us as followers of Jesus to take, where we respect and value the dignity of every human being that Jesus knit together in their mother's womb. And there is a tremendous amount of learning that we all need to go on as we hold on to orthodoxy and trust that the Holy Spirit can do whatever the Spirit wants to do in every individual's life. Now, on the topic of things like MAID, yeah, there's intentional learning that we need to go on. This coming Friday, we have a seminar for our 115 chaplains. You want to know who's on the front line of dealing with things like MAID? Our chaplains. We have 15 chaplains across the country, and one of our workers who leads Camel Woodlands, which is a seniors' home in Ontario, she's going to be leading a seminar because the government is requiring any nursing home or seniors' home to have a pathway, doesn't matter what profession of faith the institution holds to, a pathway for any individual to access things like MAID. Well, that's very complicated for us, isn't it? And so there's a lot of learning that we have to go through. And so I'll take MAID for a second. We can take a posture of fighting and being angry and then having somebody, and maybe some of you have already gone through this, where someone in your family chooses to do that and you're afraid to tell anybody within the church because you think you're going to get judged. But what you need most is the support of your church, even if you disagree with the decision that your family member made. And what you need most is the support of the body of Christ during that time. It's complicated. It's incredibly complicated. Personally, I would say I am very concerned with some of the legislation that has now been tabled and put on pause that was going to include mental health that would allow access to MAID. So any individual that felt that they had any even ADHD, oh, I can qualify for MAID. That's a scary thing for us to go down. But these are the waters that we're walking into and having to navigate. So, yeah.
This question is longer, so just track with me. I'll read through it, and then if we need to, we'll come back to it.
Sure.
One of the biggest challenges in evangelism right now is the negative influence that Christian nationalism, dominion theology, and conspiracy theories around climate change, etc., have on the perceptions of those outside the church, i.e. those friends and colleagues that I come in contact with on a daily basis. How does Ryan, feel about these issues, and how would you address this in your weekly teaching, which includes ways in which Christians should positively engage in our culture, politics, and creation care based on a proper understanding of Jesus' kingdom and the principles Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount?
I've forgotten the first half.
Do you want me to break that down a little bit?
No, I'm only kidding. This is a question where I probably won't answer in a way that all of you love in this room. Welcome to pastoring and welcome to the Christian and Missionary Alliance. There is diversity within the room and the positions that people hold theologically. There's a lot of passion and... the accessibility of, I talk about this a lot, the accessibility of podcasts. When I started preaching in the late 90s, if you wanted to get a sermon series by some pastor, Charles Swindoll, I'm trying to go back to the 90s, Charles Swindoll, or who's Andy's dad?
Charles Stanley.
You know, you would have to go down to Christian Publications and buy a cassette or a CD and then, you know, listen to that kind of stuff. Now, we're in an era where there is constant content being put out constantly. And based on the emotion that you may be feeling and you like what you're hearing, we all kind of begin to graft on to different thinking and thought. And a lot of times, we don't know who these individuals are, where they've gone to school, where they've been nurtured, and what the background is, and what is their motivation for why they're doing what they're doing. It's try being a preacher in 2024, right? Everybody's trying to keep up with, you name your favorite preacher, right? So some of that stuff feeds into a lot of the divergence of thought that exists today. In the Alliance, I think we've got a very solid statement of faith. And in the Alliance, I think we are a very centrist denomination, and we try to stay out of the ditches. And if you're asking Ryan Graham tries to stay out of the ditches. And I'm not a fan. I haven't seen many people that encounter people who want to fight with them and argue with them and prove them wrong want to say, yeah, I'm in. I want to follow Jesus. That's awesome. I love being told and being belittled and made fun of, and sign me up. My posture, spoke it before, is one of thoughtful, non-reactive leadership and learning how to listen and learning to understand, even if I don't agree with what's being communicated. And it's not always my job or my responsibility to make everybody think like me. So I think that summarizes my posture, and it communicates. Am I a fan of some of the stuff that's going on that you listed there? No. No, I think it's really divisive. And I think it's causing a lot of the exodus that we were talking about before. I just want to, Ryan Graham just wants to be like Jesus and practice the ways of Jesus. So that'd be my answer.
Thank you. As we face a society that is more and more anti-Christian and secular, some would say progressive Christianity or the progressive church, it seems that we need to become more fearless as believers. How would you lead and pastor us towards fearlessness for Christ, which is scary, but a real need?
Well, I would define fearlessness for Christ, again, back to the posture that you take as how you in the ways that you engage in culture. If fearlessness means going out and ramming Jesus down everybody's throat, I don't know how effective you're going to be today. But if fearless means taking a loving, compassionate posture to walk with individuals who are trying to figure this out and patiently journeying with them and loving them in the midst of the chaos and brokenness of their lives, well, I'm communicating to you the posture that I take with my friends. Right now, Christiana and I, where we live, I would say 90% of our friends are not in the church. That's who we live our life with. And we journey with them. We don't love everything that's going on in their lives, but we hang out with them, we journey with them, and we help them figure out life. And that would be the posture that I would be encouraging every single person in Southview to take. You're not compromising Jesus. You're not compromising Scripture. You're actually taking a posture of a loving, patient embrace of people who Jesus needs to change, not you. So
it's good to remember it in that order. What are your thoughts about leading our next generation, our kids and grandkids, towards a deep relationship with Christ?
It's one of the things that with the search team, there were certain things within the job profile and the description that I was most interested in. So I was actually really encouraged at what I saw today and yesterday in the congregation that was here. So if the board comes to a place of saying, engaging the emerging generations, and that is something that I've just given the last decade of my life to, if that is going to be a priority, and I was chatting with Justine, I don't know where Justine is, I can't see anything, but she was asking me some questions about how I would support women's ministry and whatnot, and my answer was, I would support women's ministry the exact same way I will support every ministry of the church. My job as a senior pastor, the microphone's going to go away from my mouth for a second, is to kind of take all the ministries and be moving them in the same direction towards what we agree is our purpose and our mission, right? But if the board, as a board and a staff, we say, now for a season, we need to give disproportionate resources to engaging the emerging generations. So that means more time, more energy, more resources goes there. Well, that's not Ryan making that decision. That's a collaborative decision that we're going to make. But that means that for a season, we're going to give extra and disproportionate time and resources and staffing towards engaging in the emerging generations and create metrics around that. So that is something that I'm really excited about. But how that's lived out, that may affect a whole bunch of things within the church, right? If we want to see younger people engaged at every level of the church, there may be some changes to some of the things that have to happen. But we'll go on that journey together. So there you go.
That's great. What are some characteristics that come to mind of an unhealthy church? And how would you work to foster a healthy church by contrast? And then the second part, can you elaborate on healthy church culture, healthy leadership, etc.?
Some of the things that you kind of watch, I'm going to go down a little rabbit trail. What time we got?
That's fine.
So one of the things that the portfolios that I give leadership to, so I loved the conversation about land because I'm a part of a team that leads the land stewardship for the entire denomination. We got almost $2 billion of land in the Alliance across Canada. And I told you a little bit earlier on that the state of the church is very different across the country. And in some places in Ontario and in the Lower Mainland, there are churches that are so far in decline that they're closing the doors, and then that land reverts back to the district. And the district goes, well, we don't have a plant. What are we going to do? Well, we'll put a for sale sign up on it. And then that land is gone forever. Okay. So this is just a little bit of a rabbit trail. But in that journey, I've had the privilege of being a part of a group called CityGate that is kind of leading the way of gathering all the different networks and denominational leaders around stewarding and reimagining church properties and lands and some of the opportunities that are there. And one of the things that, as a byproduct of being in those rooms, that I've learned is that there are several denominations that they have been staying afloat because they've been selling off land or they have amalgamated a lot of churches together into one. So what I'm getting to is if what is funding the ministry is legacy money from the past, but not the ongoing nurturing of raising up funds for the future, that those doors will close eventually. So one of the markers of an unhealthy church is 40 people in the room and $1 million in the bank. That is actually a significant marker of unhealth. Another marker, I would say, of unhealth is significant emphasis on just the gathering, but not the scattering, right? And so if you can't measure the impact that the people who gather are having outside of the walls, that means what we're fostering, and this is not prescriptive to Southfield, I'm not saying this, but what I'm saying, this is something you got to pay attention to. What we're fostering then is consumerism, right? You're gathering together for great worship, a good preacher, and I like it, but it's not translating into how I live my life outside of the walls. So consumerism is actually a sign of unhealth within a church. And then there's the ones that we should always be paying attention to. Are there people regularly coming to faith through all of us within the community here? Are there people that are getting baptized? And one of the metrics I would say, I'm not belittling when our kids and our teens get baptized. We celebrate all of that. But do we ever have baptisms of people who haven't been coming, who aren't from the church, right? That are coming to discover Jesus through relationships with all of us. So that would be one. What was the second part of the question?
The second part was around the, can you elaborate on the healthy culture, healthy leadership, yeah, et cetera?
Yeah. What? Well, so I'm not going to say the names of the church. There are a few churches that I have some really good friends that lead these churches. And these churches, and this is not prescriptive to what we want to see happen with our staff. I'm just saying it's a culture that has been developed over a long period of time. But when they hire staff, if those staff are still around in 5 years, they've done something wrong. They actually have a culture where people are joining the staff. So a couple of these churches, they have a core team that are there for the long haul and have been there for a long time. But who they attract and who they hire, they intentionally say to them, our job is to develop you, to launch you. And there are some churches, one of them's over in the UK, that like they're literally changing the country. They're actually having tangible, measurable impact. And you can trace that all back to one church. And literally, there's hundreds of church plants and restarted and rebirthed churches all over the UK, and they can all be traced back to this one church because they have a culture that is, we develop really healthy, spirit-filled leaders, and we give them the boot. And they go and they do incredible things for Jesus. That's a marker of a really healthy church and leadership culture.
Why do you believe in Jesus, and how have you worked through doubts in your own faith journey?
Great question. Oh, you want deconstruction conversation stuff. that's a catchphrase too, right? Deconstruction. It is a hot topic. Pretty much all of you in the room, you've deconstructed on some level at some point. You were raised somehow, you were raised in some environment, maybe in a different denomination or an independent Bible church or something, and you went through a season in your life where you were wrestling with how much of that is the truth of Scripture and how much of that is the nurturing of a thought that is just dominant in that environment. All of us have gone through that kind of stuff. Why does Ryan Graham believe in Jesus? Personal, impactful, passionate experience of him. Tangible. And over the years, you will hear the stories of what I have had the ability to see and experience, including my own divine healing after 20 years of not. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool story. Look forward to hearing that one day for the group. How do you create a couple more and then we'll begin our wrap up. But how would you create a safe space for those who have experienced church hurt or trauma?
Yeah, well, I don't know what the culture has been in Southview. I've heard that there's incredible care networks that have been developed over the years, like really good stuff. In fact, that's one of the things that Southview is known for, and I'm hoping that those environments continue to be nurtured and developed. How would I continue to cultivate that? By empowering the people that are passionate about that to continue to create those environments. But again, it's that posture of being a non-reactive, thoughtful, learning to listen and to listen well to individuals, their hurt, their brokenness. All of us in this room have a story, right? All of us have stuff in our lives. And so that would be, I guess, my answer to that is, and I really like Craig, and I've known him for a really long time, and I think he's a phenomenal leader, and I love what I'm hearing about what he's doing.
You talked about You talked about a common refrain that we would hear you speak of frequently. If you became the senior pastor of Southview, gather to scatter. What is your vision of how that would look practically in ministry going forward?
Yeah, we've spoken to that a number of times in our conversation here. Remember the whole conversation about raising the missional capacity of the church. And again, I'm not going to be prescriptive. I have a ton of ideas. I have a ton of places and spaces that I've had the ability and the privilege to be a part of where some really cool things are happening. But that stuff has to be identified by the team, the staff, by the elders board, and by all of you. Here's what I mean by that. A lot of times, churches will say, this is our ministry for outreach, or this is our ministry for international missions. Or if you want to be involved in outreach, here's the thing you have to get involved in. I hope over time that we see a little bit less of that and all of you begin to identify, I'm incredibly passionate about mental health. I'm incredibly passionate about helping people grow deeper in their empowerment of the Holy Spirit. I'm really passionate about, and it's not an organized, identified, this is the ministry of Southview, but it's things I'm really passionate about, after school programs for kids. I'm really passionate about community gardens. What if we got, I don't know, how many people are in here? Like 300, 400, 500? I don't even know. All of you own homes. What if you took a small plot of your land and you and everybody in the room did it, and you grew a garden, and we had the ability to make sure nobody in South Calgary would go hungry. I know there's not as long of a growing season in Calgary, but during the growing season in Calgary, right? So we could have a community garden out here or there, wherever it is, but you could have hundreds more, and it's on your land, and you know there's a bunch of people that are really passionate about it. These are just ideas. Do you know what I mean? But do you get the heart behind it? It's not programmatic. It's empowering all of you to find what it is that Jesus has uniquely gifted and called you to be a part of to change the world. So there's my answer to that. That doesn't mean we're getting rid of all the programs. We're not.
No, it's well said, and I think it's something to think about on many levels, right, for all of us. Okay, the last question for you. How can we be praying for Ryan, for you, and for your family specifically?
Yeah. Well, if you guys offer me the job tomorrow night, I mean, that's one thing. We got to make a decision on that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in my current role that has to be wrapped up. You know, and there's a lot of people connected to that, a lot of teams connected to that. And, well, some of you are excited maybe at the potential of me. Maybe not all of you, but some of you are a little bit excited. But back at the office, there's a bunch of people that are really sad and disappointed and confused and concerned. So there's relationships there. So you can be in prayer for that. For our family, while we are totally excited, and Calgary was home for 20 years, and for Christiana, I think a lot of you know, she grew up in this church until she was a teenager. And so it's a homecoming. But that picture that you see there, our kids are in that empty nesting phase. And in a couple of months, Christiana and Ryan are going to find themselves in a new home, in a new ministry, digging into that with our kids all over the world. And that will be a significant, well, I might get emotional, so yeah, enough said there. Yeah. And they'll boomerang and all that kind of stuff, but it's still, we've had them. All the ones that have gone through university already, they lived at home the whole time, right? So we've had nothing but people constantly. There's people at my fridge and I don't even know who they are, you know? And that's gonna end, and that'll be significant.
And we'll definitely be praying about that,
yeah.
Ryan, for sure. Can you give Ryan a big hand of applause for working through all of that?
I don't know how to put that in there.
About halfway through all these questions, I don't know if any of you have been in an interview lately, but I was like, ooh, yeah, that's a lot of questions. But thanks for taking the time to do that. So for next steps, I'm sure many of you are like, okay, so that was that. And Ryan and Christina have been here since, I believe, Thursday. And so many meetings and so many discussions and the preaching three times. And not to mention in Ontario, it's what, like 10 o'clock right now? All of that. But next steps. So a couple things. If you have comments or questions from anything that wasn't covered or you'd like to just, you know, talk through over the weekend, from the weekend, please share them in person with the board tonight. So could I get all the board members, could you just stand so people know where you are and who you are? Perfect. So if you have questions, there's a number of board members here. They'd be happy to take your questions, some of the staff as well. Feel free to ask them anything that you have on your mind. And then as well, if you could, if that doesn't work, you can email succession@southviewchurch.com. And we just ask that you do it by day's end tomorrow. And if you're wondering, well, why tomorrow? Tomorrow evening, the board will be meeting to discuss this weekend's events and to solidify next steps in this process. So we would appreciate anything that you have to say. It'd be great. And then as far as a conclusion, a few things, a few thank yous. And of course, doing this, you always risk missing somebody, but we'll try to get it. I want to just thank everybody for praying. I think that honestly has been the key through this entire process. I know we've been running the prayer sessions in between the services. I know we've had days where we've fasted, prayed collectively as a church. I know the staff have been praying, the board has been praying, each of you have been praying. And so individually and collectively, you know, that's what moves mountains, right? It's prayer. And so thank you for that. We want to continue to bathe all of this in prayer, so keep doing that as we move forward. And then I want to thank you for attending tonight, for submitting the questions, so many questions, and for choosing to be part of this journey. I think, you know, have all of you here tonight is just, it's overwhelming, actually, to see everybody that's out there. And so thank you for that. And then for the volunteers, for Michelle and Sheila and the staff and the other volunteers involved tonight to put this all together, as well as the land piece before this, thank you for all of your efforts with that. And then I want to thank the search team as well. The search team, when John was up here, like the hours and hours, and I believe some Saturday morning meetings at 7 and some evening meetings that went, you know, probably way too late for most of us, for all of that tireless work, I don't think we could really even contextualize what that means and how that's been for you. So thank you for doing that, for the Zoom calls, et cetera. Thank you for that. And lastly, Ryan and Christina, thanks for listening to God's call and for coming out and for sharing your heart. So Ryan, can you please, if you have a final comment, and please close us in prayer.
Yeah, I didn't think about a final comment. I would just say, echoing the work that the search team has put into this, it's unbelievable. I was in a meeting and they said you guys were handed a 190 page.
I counted all of them.
And I said, you mean for all the candidates? And they were like, no, just you, Ryan. And I was like, oh.
And four sermons.
Wow. The amount of work they've put in. But here's what I would say. It has shown me the passion and commitment and care they have for this church. And it's above and beyond. And they deserve all of the thanks because they have put a tremendous amount of work into it. The last thing that I would say is it is so cool to take a posture of surrender and just say, Jesus, you open a door we're going to walk through it. You open a door, we're going to walk through it. And that has been Christana and my posture through this process. And there have been some pretty sweet moments over the course of these last 4 days that are really helpful for us in seeing what Jesus is doing as well. And I hope the same has been for many of you over these days. Let me pray for us. Jesus, we thank you that as the song we sang this morning, you will build your church, and you are building your church. Even in the dark places where we don't see what we want to see, you are there, and you are building your church. Jesus, we are grateful for how you have built this church over the years. And now as we stand at the door of a new season, we take a posture of surrender in knowing that we are going to trust you for what you have for us next. So thank you for tonight. Thank you for the fellowship. Thank you for the good result of a vote. And I pray that you would go with all of us as we go from here, and pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.